Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome, good morning. Beautiful weather in Johannesburg. Hope you had a wonderful week. Morning, Jonathan. How are you this morning?
Well, as you said, it's a beautiful morning. Before I came here, I had a half an hour walk.
Oh, excellent.
Through the suburbs of Glen Hazel and Fairmount, and it's just, there's almost a smell of spring in the air, you know. It's although we only, what, the 14th of July, we're supposed to be midwinter.
Yes.
So, what a beautiful day. And, you know, last week, this time I mentioned I was going to Potchefstroom, and it's dry there. There's dry. It's very dry there, and it's dusty. And, you know, just to give a bit of feedback, I got in just before Shabbos, and we had to leave on Sunday morning. And the bed and breakfast was on the other side of Potchefstroom, and also only had electronic gates, so we didn't have a side gate. And also, you know, we spoilt here in Glen Hazel, we have an A-roof, so you can carry. So even if we did get out, we would have to walk kilometers. And then the people gave me names, but they didn't give me contact numbers, and there was no telephone book in the bed and breakfast. They're very modern, you know, everything's on the internet or the cell phone. So, I look forward to the program today.
Right. And you mentioned when I spoke to you, we're going to talk about Western Transvaal.
The old Western Transvaal. It's called the Northwest now.
Yes. You know, I wanted to invite this morning into the studio Stan Schmuckler, because he comes from Lichtenburg,
yes,
which is in the Western Transvaal, and he's an absolute expert on that area and the surrounding area. But he just come back from Canada, so I'll try and get him in and see if we can have an arrangement for possibly next Friday or the week after then, because there's really some interesting stories that Stan can tell us.
Yeah, Lichtenburg is a farming area,
yeah,
not a mining area, is it?
No, not a mining area.
Because this is what I try to be mindful, as it were, when I drove from here to Potch. It's just an hour and 15, 20 minutes. And the road to Fochville is quite good. It's a highway, but afterwards there's like 10 stop streets, and
yes,
and it's a very narrow road. So you can see where the money, I'm open to correction, but from Fochville, that's the end of Gauteng, and then you get into the northwest, and you can just see the difference in the roads. But what I did notice, you know, I felt like underneath there was the old gold reef that I was traveling along, you know, and you see mines, you see a lot of mines there. And the place like Fochville, Carltonville, Western Aria, Potch, of course, and Klerksdorp. And I was just wondering, you know, reflections of the past, if we had to go back 50, 100 years,
yeah,
of these Jews that came out of Litter or Germany or wherever, and this is where they lived for generations and,
yeah,
brought up children.
Yeah, we're talking about Lichtenburg. For example, I knew a family there, well, quite a few families, so I'm sure Stan Schmuck will tell us much more. There was Carly Plenn and his wife Sarah. Her maiden name was Killen. She was the sister of Barney Killen. I'm sure many of you remember Barney Killen. He was a chaplain during the Second World War. He was also at the Zionist Federation as a secretary and very involved with the Pine Street Shul. And then there was the other family, Basil Klett. He's a dentist, and he went to live in, I think he went to Germiston when he left Lichtenburg. And the rabbi there, I remember, was a rabbi, Dr. Abrahamson.
Wow.
Because when he left, he also went to the East Rand. So, but I can't go into more detail on Lichtenburg, but I know you mentioned Carltonville. One of the early rabbis there in the 50s was, maybe a little earlier, was Rabbi Fogel. I'm sure many of you remember,
yes,
him.
Yes,
Rabbi,
yes.
Fogel later then became the rabbi of the Eitz Chaim Shul. And then he built at the Eitz Chaim Shul a little Yad Vashem there, you know, for the Holocaust, which you would go downstairs and see it.
Mm.
They then moved it to the Biachat Center, all those beautiful engravings, the paneling. And then when he left Johannesburg, he went to Sea Point Shul to become the assistant at the Murray Road Shul. That's Carltonville. Then if we talk about...
It's this Rabbi Fogel. Vogel. F-O-G-E-L. Yeah, he had a son. He had a son. He was in medical school with me. And,
yes.
I think he's in the States now. He's a psychiatrist.
Yes.
So that's my thing. So if we go just perhaps slowly, if you draw a line from here to Klerksdorp, let's say you went in a car today, you know, and you know, where do you start? You start in, let's say, Florida, Roodepoort, Krugersdorp.
Yes, Krugersdorp.
All of those Hetchels.
All of those. Klerksdorp, for example, there was about 350 Jewish families there, souls rather. The reverend there was, the rabbi was called Melzer, if I remember correctly. I'm talking about the 50s. Then, of course, if you went to Krugersdorp, you know who was the rabbi in Krugersdorp in the 50s? Rabbi Benny Isaacson.
Oh, yes.
When he left the great synagogue. He went there, and then afterwards, he went on to Bloemfontein. Then when you talk about, we've mentioned Potch, there was a Reverend Bloch who was there for also many years. Then, of course, there were other areas like Wolmaranstadt and Schweizer-Rheinecker. Uh-huh. You know, they all had Jews living there. They had little shops, you know. They were smosas in the beginning, and they opened up these little concession stores. As you said, there were so many mines along the way.
Yes. Right. So they would come out, let's say, the typical Jew who went to Wolmaranstadt and Lichtenberg. Let's say they came out of litter. The story is they took the train and the boat and the Cape Town up here, and then they arrived in Johannesburg, and then some are probably wagons or cars. To survive, they ended up in a place like Potch, which is actually quite big relative to Fochel.
Yes,
but dotted along the way, there must have been thousands. If you're talking about 300 souls in Klerksdorp. You're talking about a few thousand that's on this Western Transvaal story.
Yes.
And some of them became farmers?
Yes, farmers. And a lot of them, as I said, they opened up what they call these concession stores because of the mines.
Yes.
And they some of them also started wholesalers, and they started, you know, they sold drapery and not only food products as well. They did very, very well. And, of course, the children were all sent to Johannesburg because there was no education there. If there was a big community, say, like, for example, Klerksdorp. And by the way, there was a chazan who came from Klerksdorp, who later became the chazan of the Bria Shul. That was Chazan Kleimer. I'm sure many of you remember him as well. He succeeded, I think it was, yes, he succeeded Dudi Fischer. So then there's also, I must mention about Carltonville, Rabbi Fogel came from Hungary. Mm-hmm. And you know who his close friend was? The late Rabbi Zalsa Senior.
Okay.
He also came from Hungary, and he always used to go and visit Rabbi Fogel in Carltonville, because they were, from the same area. And he also used to take with him the present Rabbi Yossi Zalsa as a little boy when he went to Colton.
Yeah.
We're taking an ad break. We'll be back in a few moments.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
So we're talking about what in those days what we used to call them the Western Transvaal. Today is now called the Northwest, because Dr. Mockett was at Potchefstroom last week. We've mentioned Klerksdorp. We've mentioned Carltonville. There was another one called Costa. I don't know if you also.
I've never been to Costa, but I've heard of it, yes. Yeah, was it also mining?
Also mining. I knew one family who came from Costa as well. Her maiden name was Keston. I'm just trying to recall who she married. But this is going back about 50, 60 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, there was Schweizer-Rheinecker, there was Wolmaranstadt, Lichtenberg, very well known, and then you had Krugersdorp. And in Krugersdorp you had some wonderful, very, very prominent families. For example, the Tannenbaums.
Oh, yes.
Now, the Tannenbaumes,
the pharmaceutical company.
Pharmaceutical, Adcock Ingram Group, was in Krugersdorp. And there was Archie Tannenbaum. And there, of course, there was the Tannenbaum who started the Adcock Ingram Group. The one Tannenbaum became the chairman, who was very involved with the Bria Shul when he moved to Johannesburg. For quite a few years.
So if we look at these places, it's almost like I'm getting a picture now of litter. You know, if you do some history, all these little shtetls. But here you've got, you know, like a triangle kind of the Western Transvaal is maybe, you mentioned 10 to 12 or 15 places. Whenever we talk about the words a Rabbi Fogel, what was his, like, typical day? Because, you know, we're not living in Glen. It wasn't Glen Hazel. Now there was no kosher butcheries. There was no shochet. There was no main shuls, schools.
The rabbi himself was the shochet.
Yes,
right. And he used to teach cheder in the afternoon.
Right.
So that kept him occupied. But then, for example, the rabbi of say Potchefstroom, who in those days was Rabbi Goldberg.
Goldberg, yes.
No, Potchefstroom was a
Bloch.
He would travel to one of the outer places and go and teach a bar mitzvah boy. So they were occupied all the time.
Like on a farm.
On a farm, yeah. And then share it. Now, if we talk
So the typical Jew was like a traditional Jew. But you would have a rabbi who kept the halacha like 100%.
And you'd find the rabbi, if it was, say, during the day and he wasn't occupied, he himself was occupied studying Gemara all day, sitting in his...
So were very strong-minded.
Very strong-minded.
And most of them were married.
All of them
were married. So the wife is... It's almost like the Chabadniks, the Shluchim. Yes. These rabbis came out to this Western Transvaal in the mine. It was actually a mining area, mining farming.
Take, for example, Randfontein.
Right.
Randfontein, you had a Reverend Goldberg there. But Randfontein also had about 240 Jewish souls there as well. Mm. And there was a Jewish man in Randfontein. His name was Meyer Katz, K-A-T-Z. Because there was another family called Katz, K-E-T-Z, in Randfontein. There was the Wolfson family. And outside Randfontein was the very big... factory where they made the Black Cat peanut butter for Tiger Brands. So it was a very, very highly...
Was that Frankel? Or was it?
That was Frankel, Rudy Frankel.
Yes.
Rudy
Frankel. Where was he born?
He came from Germany. Rudy Frankel came from Germany.
And it's straight to Johannesburg.
Yeah. And then he came here. He landed the Cape and then he came here. And he started Tiger Oats. And then they made Jungle Oats, and then they built this factory in Randfontein. They started making Black Cat peanut butter. Now, Black Cat peanut butter, I want our listeners to know
Black
this.
Black Cat peanut butter, yeah. Gives you muscles.
Was one of the first kosher products on the list for Pesach. If you go back to the 1940s and 50s, there was a list, and I've still got that list. I've often referred to it now on the studio here. There were 10 or 12 kosher products that you could buy. The rest is all homemade. Not like today, you can walk in and buy everything.
So they kushered the factory.
They kushered the factory.
Right.
And the one product was Black Cat peanut butter. I remember the other product, well, I know it's not by Pesach, but you could get... not a margarine, it's like a fat. It was called Purine,
Yes. So let's go back to Black Cat peanut butter.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated that it would be a kosher product for Pesach.
That was outside Randfontein.
Do you remember those days where you used to put your Black Cat peanut on your matzah?
On your matzah, and you used to go to the Rand show.
Yes.
Remember the
With
Rand
your matzah show? And your Black Cat peanut butter.
Your Black Cat peanut
butter. So you had the matzah that you chew, you have, and then your Black Cat peanut butter, which is quite a sticky.
It was very sticky, yes.
Yeah. Now, what's the history behind it? Why did they choose Black Cat peanut? Was it a very popular choice?
It was peanut, peanuts.
They're not kidney.
Yeah. So they could do that. I can actually picture the factory now because I've been there. I remember.
So just explain what does it look like? Was it like a little building with?
No, it was quite a big building, but one story. It wasn't a double story or anything. Mm. Quite a long one because we had. Landslide, my late parents' Landslide, who stayed about, say, a half a kilometer away from the factory.
Yes.
His name was Wolfson. He owned a jewelry store in Randfontein.
Okay.
And so when we used to go and visit him on a Sunday, take a drive out there, you had to pass the Tiger Oats factory there. Where they were manufacturing Black Cat. And they also did the oil. You remember you had the cooking oil as well.
Yes, yes,
as well.
That came from, yeah,
and that was so, kosher.
Okay, so kosher. So, and you say Rudy? It was one of Rudy Frankel's factories.
Rudy.
So
Frankel,
he was obviously sensitive.
Yes, he started
to this.
Tiger Oats and milling.
Yes,
and then of course they made all the different cereals like the Jungle Oats and the Tiger Oats, and then it expanded, and of course it became a very, very national company. Today it's very, very, it's one of the biggest Tiger brands. It's one of the biggest. And Tiger brands then also, in the late 1970s and 80s, they started to manufacture matzah in the Isando.
Mm-hmm.
But they took it over. There was the original matzah factory was in Dornfontein,
okay,
where you remember the Sievert Road and Sievert Avenue became one, like a point.
Yeah, yeah, yes.
And there was the famous Joe Bloom. He owned the, the company that was making Mossmark's matzah. Now, I'm going to put out a question, and I'm not going to give the answer because I want the listeners there to please do research.
Yes.
How did the name Mossmark's matzah get its name? Where does the name Mossmark's come from? Now, I know the answer. I've got the answer because I was very involved in it.
I haven't a clue.
And I want to know where that name came from. So if you do know, you can
text. Okay, so I want to ask you, you know,
34519.
A couple of months ago, a few weeks ago, we were talking about superstitions.
Yes.
And you did ask a question, is why people don't open umbrella inside.
Yes, right.
And we didn't get an answer and we left it. And this has percolated through my mind a few times. I don't know the answer. Maybe just...
Why don't you open up?
I know it's a superstition. It's a very strong one.
In my family, it was very strong.
My mother, I think, my father, they went
they
very
upset. They wouldn't
open
an umbrella.
You could not open an umbrella inside. Is this just a superstition?
Okay, just think about it. I'll give you the answer in a little later on.
Okay.
Think about it.
Okay.
Let's see if our listeners know. So why don't we... Why? What is the superstition? What is the problem with opening an umbrella in a house?
Okay, so it's a side issue, but it does come out of it, that you can't... On Shabbos, you can't walk around with umbrella. Even
no,
if
you
it's
can't.
Open. You can't walk because it's like a tent.
That's what it is. You're building a tent. You're opening up a tent.
So a number of people have said to me, it's a hot day. Why don't you wear, put an umbrella? No, we can't do it.
Building a tent. And don't forget, an umbrella has got all those metal things. So you're actually building a structure.
Yeah.
You see.
But the question is, if it's open before Shabbos, you can't even use it
you
on Shabbos.
Because, first of all, we didn't have A-roofs where you could carry it.
Yeah.
So one, it's the same like, for example, you can't carry, even if there's an A-roof, you don't carry a lulav and an etrog on a Shabbos.
Yes.
Or on a yontov, on a Shabbos.
Yeah, except for a moral who can carry a knife.
A moral can carry a knife.
That's why we always have a bris on a Shabbos, but
because you could be carrying the shofar.
But there's always something that sticks, and this is a very nice pun, of course, is a black cat peanut butter. But I'm absolutely fascinated that out in Randfontein, they would kasher the whole factory to supply probably there's far more people that are kosher now, strictly kosher. I mean, it's crazy here. We come to Glen Hazel So there must have been a market for this.
I'll tell you the market, because it doesn't matter whether they manufactured for Pesach only. Once it was manufactured, they made it for the whole year. I mean, it had the heksha on it, but you could use it the whole year. And not only the Jews who are using it, but all the Gentiles are also using it. But also, you get all the Muslims, the halal, they also went for the black cat peanut butter.
When last did you have black cat peanut butter? I haven't had it for a long time.
No.
It must have been a massive craze.
Massive, for
decades.
As you said, if you would go to the Rand show, and it was always fell out during Pesach, you'd see everybody their little matzah sandwiches with black cat peanut on or with jam on it. But you know, also, talking about the halal, and we're going to take a break in a few moments, we're talking about halal. Have you noticed, have you ever been to, say, the hypermarket? And have you seen how many of the Muslim come and buy from the kosher section? They don't buy from the other, the non-kosher bread or from the fish counter. It's quite an amazing thing to see.
But there's something also that comes out of this, that the butchers here, in kosher butchers, apparently farmers from around, like Heidelberg and places, are coming. They come and they buy the kosher meat because it's been shechted properly and it's prepared properly and it's ready for the braai.
Well, correct.
And so it's very interesting that when we talk about a kosher market, a consumer market for food, it's not just for people that are Jewish and kosher. There's a lot of people that might not even keep Shabbat, but they kosher. And there's also a lot of non-Jews who prefer kosher products. As you say, halal for the Muslims.
I'll mention some
Afrikaner farmers for meat.
I remember a few months ago, maybe about a year ago, there was a terrible scare about they were putting in horse meat into the mince, into the polonies and the sausages and the non-kosher.
Yeah.
And suddenly the sales at all the kosher butcheries, and particularly at the supermarkets, the hypermarkets, just skyrocketed because all the non-Jews and Gentiles were now buying kosher polonies and sausages.
Yeah.
They were scared if they were buying the others, there would be horse meat in it or something like that.
Yes.
So this is one of the
So the kosher is pure beef. It's beef.
Yeah. We're taking a break. We'll be back in a few moments.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. We were talking all about some kosher products, and we mentioned the peanut butter. And I also mentioned, when I said Tiger Oats, and before that, we had a factory in Dornfontein owned by the Blooms, where they manufactured Mossmark matzah. And I put out the question, how do we know, and where does the name Mossmark come from? Remember, in those days, we could buy local matzahs, was Mossmark, and you could buy Bears matzahs as well. Now, Bears matzahs was manufactured in Newtown at the top of Bree Street there, and one of the owners was the late Rosh Beth Din, Rabbi Shlomo Rosenzweig. He was one of the owners of matzah. But I want to know, well, I'll ask the listeners, please, where did the name Mossmark come from? And before that, we used to import matzah, the Manischewitz's matzah, from America. Not like today, you go and you can get 20 different brands from Israel. There was only two or three brands in South Africa. The Manischewitz's, there was the Mossmark's, and the Bears matzahs. So if you do know, you can text 34519. Why do they use the term Gentiles? Why not use non-Jews? What is the meaning of Gentile? I regard the Muslims as just that. The Muslims as just what they say. Why not Christians? Well, you know, I've always used that because Gentiles is not a derogatory thing. It's a description of all non-Jews. Anyone who you could be a Gentile, you could be a Buddhist. You could be a Zoroastrian.
An atheist.
Yeah. You could be an atheist. You could be... that's why Muslim is a specific religion.
Yes.
Hinduism is a specific religion.
Christian.
So I'm referring to those who may not even believe, you know, who may, as you say, atheists. Mm. So it's not derogatory at all. So we can always... Yeah. And not everyone, not every Gentile is a Christian. So you can't say they're all Christians.
Sure, sure. Sure.
Yeah, and that's the only reason I use the word Gentiles.
I'm going back 35 years ago, and at medical school, Rabbi Bernard came and spoke. It was an ethics conference, and he spoke about the word goy.
Goy.
Now, for many people, goy is like a derogatory. He's a goy. You know, don't act like
a
goy. And he says, but it comes from Isaiah. It comes or hagoyim, to be a light to the nations. Goyim is a nation.
But I'll tell you where it even comes from before.
Yeah.
If you have a look, when Isaac's wife, who was she?
Rivka.
Was going to give birth.
Yeah.
And she inquired. She went to the tents of, and to inquire, and they said, there are two goyim in your womb.
Yes.
There are two nations in your womb.
Yes.
A goy means it's a nation.
Nation. Yes.
A nation. So it's not a derogatory term as well. And that's where it comes. It comes straight from the Torah. There are two nations in your womb.
Yes. Which she had a hard pregnancy.
She had a hard pregnancy.
Because really they were fighting. And it continues today. Yeah, the fight.
They were fighting already inside. So she went to the tents of... yeah. Shem and what was the other one? Where Yaakov used to study. And that is where you get the term from, Goyim. There.
Yes.
It means a nation.
Right.
It's not derogatory at all.
And Gentiles also.
Gentiles also not derogatory at all. Because a Gentile doesn't necessarily have to be a Christian.
Yes, yes.
So
it's Jews and Gentiles.
You're right.
And Gentiles really means they're not Jewish.
Right, and they're not Jewish.
And then you get the different religions, like Muslims and Christians and Hindus.
And you get the Buddhists,
yes.
etc.
Yeah.
And then, of course, if you take Christianity as well, you get all the different sects. You can get Catholicism, and you get Protestantism, and you get the Methodists and the Calvinists. And the Presbyterians. I mean, the list.
It sounds like the Jews, eh?
Like the Jews.
We've got Chabad, and we've got Reform, and we've got the Progressives, and we've got this.
Progressive, the Liberal, and then you've got the Misnagim, and you've also got the Sephardim as well. That's within the Jewish. But that's it. So
let's say humanity, from a Jewish point of view, humanity, you've got Jews, not that they're better, but be different. You've got Gentiles. Under Jews, you've got Sephardim, you've got Hasidim, and you've got Misnagdim and whatever. The same with the Gentiles. You've got Christians and Muslims and Hindus and atheists and whatever.
Correct. And the different sects of Christianity. As I said, Protestants and Methodists and Presbyterians and Calvinists. And then look, take for example.
Before we get on to that next comment is, often what happens is words are used and they abused, and no one thinks about them. But if you go back to the origin, they'll be often like the Latin for.
Yes.
And it gives us the origin of that. Like education, the Latin is educare, which means to draw out. So at the moment, education is pouring in.
Yes.
But it's to pull out. The semantics can be very dangerous when we use words and people interpret them differently, but they don't know the origin of them.
The origin, you see, is Latin, of course. A lot of the English words are derived from Latin.
Yes.
And Rashi could speak French.
Yes.
And a lot of his commentaries quote French French.
For sure, as well.
For example, we were talking 2 or 3 weeks ago when we had Tabo in the studio. He's not well. I'm wishing him well. I hope if he's listening in. We spoke about education and reading books. And there's that famous quotation, if you went to the Johannesburg Library, which read as follows, Libri Therosis Animi, books are the key to knowledge.
Yes. Yes.
And that's where it all comes from.
Mm.
And a lot of the English words come from it. Take for the word sincere or insincere. Where does that come from? The Latin sincero means without wax. That's where it comes from.
Disciple and discipline, I was reading those disciples, is open to. I think the Latin is open to. A disciple is open to the master.
We got a text here. Just something about food. The famous Dollhouse is closing down. Well, I'm sure.
Was it ever kosher?
It was never kosher.
Yes.
But the Dollhouse, for those of our listeners who don't know, the younger generation, it's still there. It's right across the road where, in Louisbeuf Avenue, where Nussbaum's Butchery is.
Yes.
It's been going for, as far as I can remember, going for decades, at least 60, 70, 80 years. Yes. Very, very famous. It was the first drive-in.
Yes.
You drive in and you ordered your. In those days, you could buy what you call a parfait. Let's see what our listeners. Parfait. What is a parfait?
You're getting me rolling it. No. I&J, Per Friedman.
Yes.
I&J, I&J. Yeah. So someone told me there's an I&J show every Friday morning. It's Isaac and Jonathan, so it's I&J. But they always place the chicken licking.
Yeah.
We went there, but.
Parfait, if you know.
Yeah,
text.
But we went to chicken licking on a Sunday night, and they used to come with this. You ordered your chicken and chips and came in a basket. You ate in your car.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yes, you drove in there. Put your tray over the window. But a parfait. Let's see if anybody knows what a parfait is.
How do you spell parfait?
P-A-R-F-A-I-T.
Okay.
And it's you can text 34519. And another one very similar. How many of our listeners remember the famous Casablanca at the bottom of Nugget Hill? Remember, if you were driving around and you just came from it came up Nugget Street, and we didn't go up the Nugget Hill, because at the top of the Nugget Hill, and it was very steep to get up there, was that famous Chelsea Theatre. But at the bottom was that famous Casablanca takeaway. You would drive in there, and also all your food. And you know, they were the forerunners, you won't believe this, of the famous, what we used to have, the drive-in theatres. Remember, we used to drive up to the top star there at the bottom of Elof Street, and you could sit in your motor car, watch a movie, and they'd come to your window, and you'd order all your food, or you bring your own food. And that's where it started, from the Doll's House and from the...
But the Doll's House has been going for a long, long time, and it's quite a big property.
It's a very, very big property.
A lot of parquety, and... So they're there, they've got the sports fields behind. I wonder what's going to happen. Are they going to build there? Because I know Louis Botha is changing significantly. The government wants to build a lot of flats along.
Now, right next to the Doll's House is on the left-hand side of the Doll's House, if you're going down, Louis Botha, was the Temple Shalom. Reform school,
yeah, so now it's been taken over by the Torah Academy for the girls' high school. Yeah, yeah.
But behind it is a park called the Hilson Park,
yes,
where it's a bowling club there.
Yes.
And then next door, the Doll's House, is a very big motor company. So I wonder what they're going to put up there, because it's a massive stand, very big stand, because, you know, the drive-in and one thing and another.
Well, there's this whole Rio Vaya along the water is that they want to actually build along, which I think is fair enough, and this is the argument going on in Sea Point at the moment, is that the poor, they have to maybe, they work in Sea Point, and they have to drive in that ridlock of Cape Town for an hour each way. So, you know, a big brocha is if you can work close to where you live. And I think this is going to be very interesting to what happens. My bet is that they're going to put up flats there. It's a beautiful position. I think they're going to have a station there as well. So, I want to just talk about Pesach. You know, talking about black cat peanut butter. Yeah. And my wife, my in-laws came from Zimbabwe. And they often talk about Pesach in Bulawayo, which was, besides the matzah, they had to make their own wine.
Correct.
And it was chicken and potatoes and maybe a tomato and this. And they would squeeze that beautiful orange, you know, the Zimbabwean orange juice. And that was it. Now you go to here in Johannesburg on a Pesach, on a Seder, it's like a five, you know, it's five a ten star. It's 10-star meal. You can almost everything
as I said,
you can get during the outside of Pesach, besides chometz. You can have the most beautiful knedlach. You can have chicken and beef and meat and all the cold drinks.
I can show you
Coca-Cola.
The list. In the 1950s, say the early 50s, the list consisted of about 10 kosher products. As I said, black cat peanut butter. There was Purine. There was tea. It was called Pitco tea. And I'm sure many of you remember. There was Lekol was on the list already.
Lekol
was on the list then.
It's my youth,
But there was no canned fruit. There was no jams. There was no jellies. Like today, I mean, if you look at the shelves when you go shopping for a Pesach, as you said, it's mind-boggling.
Mm.
I mean, you get crisps. Who would have crisps in our days? We didn't have sweets. We played with nuts. That's what you used to play with, the nuts.
You played with nuts.
Nuts. And our parents, I remember, played my mother used to make her own jam, make her own canned fruit.
It was a simple life.
It's simple.
No, there's so much. But you know what? It comes at a massive premium, because the cost of this kosher food for Pesach often is imported.
Right.
And it's coming at quite a cost. And people go, my sugar. You know, it's like they're going to starve. And so they stock up. The good thing is that for 3 weeks after Pesach, they don't have to go shopping.
But you know,
there's no shortage.
We had the famous Aaron's Teiglach, Pletzlach, and Imbalach. That was really a luxury. And then, of course, when it came to schmaltz, there was Deborah Schmaltz, where the chicken couldn't even tell the difference. Right, we've got a text.
What's that about Deborah's schmaltz?
It was not Pitco tea, it was called Pitco tea. P-I-T-C-O. Right, a yummy, I asked what a parfait is. A yummy ice cream toppled with cream and cherries, served in a big dessert glass. Thanks for the lovely show. Regards, Phyllis. Yeah, Phyllis, I hope you, Phyllis, do you remember the teiglach, the imbalach, and the pletzlach? And you get all the different types of pletzlach. And what
pletzlach,
about the
teiglach? What's pletzlach?
Pletzlach was made from prunes and was cut prunes. Up, with, covered with
what
sugar.
What was that jelly that used to... That used to wobble. I could never come to eat it. You know, they said my parents loved
because
it.
Because they, you know.
What was the word? What was it called? You know, it was like a jelly.
I know.
Made of chicken schmaltz. Yeah, yeah.
No, what? We used to call it, was called pacha.
Pacha.
Pacha. I still make it today.
Yes.
I still do it today.
And you eat it.
And I love it.
Well, what are the ingredients of pacha?
It's from the hoof. Of a cow,
yes,
or a calf, but it takes a long time to boil, and it dissolves. But when you talk about jelly, I just want to go back to jelly. The reason why we couldn't get kosher jellies is because they used to make a jelly called trotters, and of course trotters comes from a pig, a chaza, and it's that was the hoof of that, and that is where it would what do you call it the. It's like the binder that makes it become hard.
It's so like the gelatine.
Gelatine, that's yes, what it yes, is. Yes. That's why we couldn't.
Yeah, there's a big problem in gelatine yes. in marshmallows and things
yes,
like that.
That's why we couldn't have. There was no kosher jelly. So, but there was another thing we used to make when you used to have what we call today. They call it black tea, and what we call it Russian tea. It was a glass of tea, hot in a glass, and you used to put in what we call kirsch. Now, kirsch was either a jam made from strawberries or cherries, and you put that into your glass, and you didn't put sugar in. We used to get that little cubes of sugar
yes.
made by a company in London called Tate and Lyle, and you put it on your tongue, and as you used to sip your tea, you used to suck and drink with the sugar.
So this brings back a reflection of the past. My grandfather Schmulmach, you know Schmulmach.
Yes, from Fordsburg, Mayfair.
So we used to go there on a Friday night. You know, all the cousins, whatever, like a tish, and he used to sit there. And I'll never forget they had these square sugar things. Then he got diabetes, and my father was a doctor, and that changed the whole story. Or a lot of people try not to have these sweet things, but they must be very, very nice to have them as a treat.
It's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
Now, Phyllis, I want to know this parfait, is it available at our kosher places?
No, they don't make it today.
Why not?
I haven't seen it. But it was a beautiful thing.
Just getting
we
hungry.
All loved
topped
it.
With cream and cherries.
Cream and cherries and ice cream as well yeah. sometimes. And it was in a big cone or in a big glass.
Yes.
And it was massive.
it was massive.
One was enough to feed two people, at least two or three.
When was the last time you had a parfait?
Oh, the last time we had a parfait. And you know where we used to have it? In Dornfontein, there was a company, shop called the American Ice Cream Company, owned by a German Jews, and they made parfaits, and they made the best ice cream you could ever, and was kosher. That's where we had
But we do have kosher ice cream shops here in Glen Hazel.
In Glen Hazel, but they don't make parfaits.
Is it just too expensive?
We're taking a break. We'll be back in a few moments.
Well.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Just a reminder that Shabbat comes in at 5:14 and terminates at 6:07. The Parsha is Pinchas. And on Sunday, we have the Art of the Cantor between 4 and 5. And, of course, we're now in what we call the Dry Wochen, the 3 weeks prior to Tisha B'Av. So I'm playing special music for the period. And just a reminder, Talk of the Town on Tuesday between 9 and 10. Thank you, Shabbat.
I just want
go
to say
well
something quickly.
And
Isaac, I want to just say that the Parsha Pinchas is the anniversary of my eldest son's bar mitzvah 14 years ago. Why I say that? Because of the 3 weeks we had to have the suit on the Tuesday night before the Shabbos. And believe it or not, that small little house in Observatory, we had 220 people for Shabbos in that small little house. They all came down to us, 220 people we had.
Okay.
And this is what Judaism are, is that we have Shabbat, and we have food, and we have parfaits, and we have black cat peanut butter kosher for Pesach. Thank you for a lovely, lovely show. I enjoyed it, and
pleasure.
Shabbat Shalom.
Go well.